Welcome to the Cyber Guy Podcast, your source for engaging cyber education, cyber discussions, and a look at current cyber news and trends with retired FBI Special Agent Darren Mott.
Welcome, everyone, to this week's edition of the Cyber Guy Podcast. This week, we are going to talk a little bit about cyber warfare, and we're going to talk cyber insurance. And actually, those two things, believe it or not, do kind of go together when we talk about this in context here with all the things going on in Russia and the Ukraine. But as always, I thank you for taking the time to download and listen to the podcast. My guest today will be Todd Zelenka of Assured One. He will talk a little bit about cyber insurance. So not a topic I've discussed yet on the podcast, so I figure it's a good time to kind of get an idea on what it is, who needs it, and why you should have it. And we'll talk more with him in a bit on that. But that is going to be my educational piece for the week, is what is cyber insurance? And you can probably look it up and find a lot of different definitions. So, for example, there's a company called Blackfire Cyber Insurance, and on their site, they have a cyber liability insurance piece. And they say here that third-party cyber liability insurance protects your company should a client or customer sue you over a data breach, even if the breach occurs remotely. It will cover attorney fees, court costs, damages you're required to pay, up to policy limits, so on and so forth. Some of the online businesses face risk of loss related to a variety of factors, including internet connection loss because of weather, hackers and cyber theft, which is what you hear a lot about in the news, computer viruses, loss of customer information, and so on. My guest today, Todd Zelenka, is from Assured One, and on their page, they have an innovative cybersecurity and cyber insurance protection. So they go a little deeper in what they do with their stuff. And they do a more proactive pre-breach look. They give you a cyber score, which Todd will talk about in the interview. And they, again, provide cyber insurance to give companies the financial resources as well as expert talent to address a data breach lawsuit or criminal act. So why would a company, should a company have cyber insurance? And as we talk with Todd, he'll address those issues. But cyber insurance, just like any other insurance, life insurance, car insurance, is to provide you with financial resources should you have an incident occur. Doesn't make you necessarily, you can't profit from cyber insurance, but you can certainly recoup some of the losses that could result as that occur because of, let's say, you get hit with ransomware and the bad guys want $1 million and you have to pay $1 million in ransomware. If your cyber insurance premium is $1 million, you'll get $3 million. But there'll be more on cyber insurance with our discussion with Todd. So I'm kind of giving a little short shrift here in the educational section of the podcast, but largely because I am a novice at cyber insurance. I don't know a ton about it, but Todd is going to help explain it for us. So look for that in the later sections of the podcast here. For the part two of the podcast, the threat of the week is still Russia. As we look at the Russia-Ukrainian conflict, there has been a huge increase in cyber incidents across the world since this particular event has occurred. And people have probably asked, you know, why should I worry about what's happening in Russia and Ukraine? Largely because it does affect the rest of the world, not just that section of the world, especially when it comes to cyber issues. So, for example, I got an email from my financial advisor, who gave some information from his IT director. And this is what it said. In the last 48 hours, cyber attacks aimed at the U.S. have increased north of 830% and are predominantly coming from Russia. New variants of existing tools used for cyber attacks have exploded in recent days. So Russian hackers, both nation state and criminally oriented, are utilizing the conflict in Ukraine as kind of a smokescreen to do these cyber attacks. I'm not saying that the war itself is a smoke. I'm just saying that the hackers are using people focused on that conflict to advance their hacking needs, their hacking requirements, if you will, looking to find more vulnerable companies, more things to get into as maybe defenses are down, people aren't paying attention. It's not just Russia. You're also looking at probably China doing the same thing, trying to find back doors when people aren't paying attention because all the focus is on Russia and the Ukraine. So you're likely to see a lot more of this going forward. Not that it wasn't increasing already, but you can probably expect it'll increase more. So what do you do? What can you do because of this increased attack? So I'm actually moving the protection part of the podcast to right now because it kind of falls in line with this reporting about the increase in cyber attacks, specifically from Russia. So a couple of things, and these will be things I have talked about before, but not all of them for every age group may be common. But this is, and I'm reading this again from the email my financial advisor provided me, so I'm kind of stealing this from him, but the information is still good and always good to reinforce. But protect your accounts by not using the same password. Use strong passwords, enable two-factor authentication. I say that all the time. If you listen to my latest Cyber Smart podcast, I kind of say the same thing. Any account you have, if security passwords, code words, phrases, or security questions are an option, make sure you use them. So again, this is, again, focusing on a couple things, complicated passwords. You know, if it requires you answer a question as well, you should do that. Two-factor authentication, multi-factor authentication is key. If you at least turn that on, your vital accounts, your email, your financial accounts, your social media, you will greatly reduce your risk overall. So a couple other key things, periodically review your bank and credit card statements for fraudulent activity. Obviously, a lot of the hackers out of Russia are financially motivated. They are looking to steal information to profit from it. So identity theft obviously is big with them. So make sure you check your credit card and bank statements and see if there's any charges you don't recognize, meaning someone may be in your bank or in your account moving money around that you don't want them to do so. I check my bank accounts every day just to make sure the most recent transactions I recognize. And then I question those that I haven't really had any that I had to question, other than when my wife buys stuff and doesn't tell me, then I have to say, hey, did you buy this? And there you go. Review your credit report from each bureau annually for accounts that you did not open. Now, I would say this a little differently. You can actually review your, there's a lot of services now like Mint. Mint is it's a branch of Intuit, which makes TurboTax. So I have an account with them and I get a credit score every week. But from a credit report standpoint, you can ask for one from each bureau, TransUnion, Experian, and I'm forgetting the third one. I should know it. Sorry that I don't. But there's three of them. And you know what? I'm sitting right here. Let me go ahead and look up the three credit bureaus. I know Experian and TransUnion are two. The other one, I know some of you are yelling right now. It's this one. Equifax. That's the other one. Sorry. Should have known that off the top of my head, but I did not. So those are the three. But you can ask for one every 4 months. So if you go Experian today, I want like my annual credit report. They'll give it to you for free. And then in 4 months, you can get one from TransUnion. 4 months from that, you can get one from Equifax. So that way you, every 4 months, you get a new credit report and you can make sure there's nothing odd on there that shouldn't be there because someone hacked your information. Watch out for, this is a key one. Watch out for elderly loved ones that may not understand technology, because there are those out there that will do anything to take advantage of these folks. So if you have an older parent that is getting longer in years, you may want to ask them to have access to their bank account simply so you can monitor it, not so you can necessarily take the money out of it, but so you can monitor it and make sure that no one is looking to scam them. This is an obvious one, but again, not always for your older relatives. Don't answer calls from numbers that you do not recognize. If it's important, they'll leave a message. And obviously, what I've said since I started this podcast a year and a half ago, don't click on links in text messages or emails from unknown sources. So those are your quick little protection tips for the week. Nothing new there, obviously, but some of them do bear repeating from time to time. So let's go learn more now about cyber insurance. Well, I want to welcome on to the Cyber Guy podcast, Todd Zelenka, the Vice President of Assured One. Todd, thanks so much for taking the time to come on and talk to us about cyber insurance.
Hey, no problem. I enjoy it. I enjoy listening to your podcast.
I appreciate it. And this is a topic I've not really discussed on the podcast. So we're kind of breaking new ground with what cyber insurance is. Because I'm sure if you look at the news, especially with what's going on in Russia and Ukraine and all the increased in Russian attacks, there, I assume, are going to be a lot of increase in cyber insurance claims, I guess. So before we get to this, let's talk about your background first. Have you always been involved in the cyber world, and in what ways? And if not, what were you doing beforehand, and what are you doing now?
Well, Darren, I've had a diverse background that's led to the culmination of this exact moment of being Vice President of Assured One. What I mean, I've been in sales for 25 years, selling both tangible and intangible products. About 3 years ago, I was introduced into the cyber world, and I got to learn by jumping in the deep end about learning about CMMC. I was given 1 week to create a presentation to present to the executives of the company I was applying to. They hired me, and that led to literally diving in deep to cyber, drinking from a fire hose. Now, what all that did is it led to a developing a holistic view of cyber, because cyber is much more than just pieces and parts or tools and services. It involves people, processes, and technology. But the sum of all that put together and how they work together, was the missing piece for me. It all seemed like it wasn't a complete puzzle. It was just pieces laying out. So having been in the insurance industry for now 7 years, the opportunity to add that into my arsenal made Assured Enterprises and Assured One, specifically, a perfect fit. So my role is to develop Assured One, the insurance division of Assured Enterprises.
Okay. And we won't get into this much, but are you still dealing with CMMC? Was your presentation what got you the job?
Well, yes, because compliance is still a big piece of cybersecurity. And in fact, the more compliant you are, the better your rates should be when you're looking at cyber insurance.
Okay. Well, we'll talk a little bit more about that in a bit. But so with all the news on ransomware and other cyber incidents that you see every day, and I got an email from my financial advisor saying that when the Ukrainian-Russian conflict began, attacks in the U.S. originating from Russia increased like 840%. So, and my guess is a lot of those companies have cyber insurance. Talk a little bit about, when did companies start getting into the cyber insurance business? It hadn't been around forever, obviously, because the whole cyber issue hasn't been around. But when did it start to become a thing, I guess, for lack of a better way to say it?
Well, actually, cyber insurance in some form or fashion has been around since 1990.
Well, okay.
And like cars and houses, there was no one uniformity, common policy type or standard. So in late 90s, they became third-party cyber insurance policies, and those covered damages to third parties. So like if you and I were in a victim of the damages caused by a cyber attack to, let's say, Target, as an example. Then in 2001, 2002, there was still no what they call first party coverage. And that's coverage that actually protects the business that was harmed by an attack. But it still was looking at the possibilities of what are the losses of businesses when there is a cyber attack. So business interruption, the ransomware itself, network asset damage, and even HIPAA liability language became part of cyber policies. And then around 2002, 2003, California had their Security Breach Information Act, and that really changed the landscape because California said that in the event of a breach of personal information, any business or agency that was conducting business in California must notify the affected customers or parties if it's reasonable to believe that personal information was accessed by an unauthorized person. Now, that could be an internal unauthorized breach, but it led to even more where cyber attacks were trying to get personal information. And of course, as that law became more and more enforced, it became more and more across the nation. And carriers started responding to that act by incorporating new first-party coverages. And that was expanded to include like credit monitoring costs and services for the injured parties, credit rating repair, customer notification, public relation, help and information technology forensics. So helping the business find out what happened and how to fix it. So it just started evolving. Now today, many carriers offer some form of monoline cyber liability insurance, or they can package it together with other coverages, like for a small business and a small business owner's policy. Unfortunately, for consumers and small businesses, many cyber policies that are packaged together with other coverages, although they are usually very inexpensive to add like a rider, they also usually only provide very low limits of coverage, exclude certain situations that may be relevant to your business, or even not respond in the event of property damage, or have exclusions if you're not properly prepared for or have protected yourself against cyber attacks.
So is it only, just real quick, is it only for businesses, or is there a consumer cyber insurance piece? Like if you just wanted to protect your network at home, let's say, and I don't know what damage you could really get from a, but let's take, well, identity theft. So let's say, is there possible to get cyber insurance to protect against a cyber identity theft type action that takes place outside of a third party? So I would assume like when the Target breach occurred in 2015, and they provided, I don't know if they provided OPM. I mean, using OPM as a different thing, because I know about this one. So when OPM happened, we got free credit monitoring, which I assume was part of the payout for that. Right. But if you have an incident like that where your information, there was not that kind of protection where the company said, yeah, sorry, that happened, but what can we tell you? Is there any kind of personal cyber insurance, or is it mostly just for businesses?
Cyber liability for the most part is for business. It's a commercial lines policy.
Okay.
Not a personal lines policy, but that's where services like LifeLock, for example, would be considered, in the big picture, a personal cyber liability policy.
I got you. So let me, so I understand it, you know, obviously everybody has auto insurance, you have liability and comprehensive. So when we're talking cyber insurance, when you talk about the liability part, that's to protect the third party piece. And is the part where like say I'm a company, I get hacked for ransomware and they pay the ransomware. Is that like comprehensive insurance? Is that an equivalent analogy, or am I way off on that? And if I'm way off, that's fine. I probably am, because I don't know.
Well, it's hard to compare the pieces of auto insurance, for example, and relate it to cyber liability in this case, because cyber liability is your liability exposure.
So that okay. is yeah.
things that you are considered held harmless, or that you were negligent in some form or fashion, and you caused injury or harm to someone else or within your business. That's the first party line. And therefore you have to recover from that, and the insurance helps pay that recovery.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll get back into that a little bit in a minute. But before we get to the how does cyber insurance work, which is my fourth question, my third question is, how big a business has it become? So you said it started in 1990. I got to believe it was pretty limited in people who offered it from that perspective, because like you said, it was only for third-party liability type of stuff.
Yeah, it was very new. The overall the global cyber insurance market is, believe it or not, it's a $6.15 billion industry as of 2020.
How does that compare to other types of insurance?
It equates to about 0.1% of the total global insurance market, okay. Gotcha. Which is about $6.3 trillion.
Okay. And is it largely a U.S. phenomenon, or is it a global phenomenon now, in the sense that pretty much anywhere you go, you can have some option to get cyber insurance?
Well, there is an international market. Surprisingly, the U.S., because we are such a large target, the cyber insurance market is actually 0.3% of the total U.S. insurance market. So about $4.1 billion of the $1.8 trillion that is the U.S. cyber or the U.S. insurance market. Mm. Now, interestingly enough, because of the increase of cyber attacks and the whole reason that businesses are, for the most part, small to medium-sized businesses in particular, aren't necessarily adequately protected or prepared for a cyber attack, yet their information is just as valuable as the targets or the large ones, the ones we hear about.
Sure. Yeah, because everybody has something that makes their business important. And if you were to, even if you're, a $5 million business is still could be a small company. But right. if all your intellectual property is stolen, or all of your data is stolen, or ransomware attacks can completely destroy a company. Obviously, that's something they'd want to protect. But I'm going to guess that probably most of the business in the Ukraine has probably been removed, I would say, by now. There's probably not a lot of Ukrainian insurance business going on today. Probably hard to get a premium today if you're in the Ukraine.
Probably not. but, the cyber insurance over the last year has increased about 29%.
Okay.
So almost 30%, and that's according to the National Association of Insurance Commissioners. A fact I pulled off to make sure I was accurate. but it's because more and more people are realizing that, hey, we need protection, because what if we get hacked?
Right. And so how does it work? What does it protect against? So let's say you want to contact your insurance provider and say, I need some cyber insurance. Do most companies know what they're asking for, or do they just, they heard that they should get cyber insurance in case they get hacked and have no idea what they're buying? I mean, what is it? I assume there's different levels, protect against different things, different restrictions for, you know, if you don't have firewalls, antivirus, and you don't do any training, that would raise your premium, I would guess. So just kind of talk a little bit about how the process for, if I'm a small 50-person company and I call you and say, Todd, someone said I needed cyber insurance. I've got a huge network. I've got HIPAA and other issues. What am I buying?
Okay. Well, first off, cyber insurance pays similar to a life insurance policy. It has, except that a life insurance policy is a designated sum, you know, a total. Mm-hmm. This policy will pay up to that total, whatever your damages are, because you can't profit from an insurance policy, an insurance claim. So imagine it's a check up to a certain amount that you can use as the business to pay for. And this, of course, is dependent on what the specifications of the policy say, and all of them are slightly different, but they'll pay for things like incident investigation. So, you know, you're hacked, you're not sure how, you've got to pay people to come in and try to figure out what happened, how it happened, what the damage was, what was affected, etc. You need to then have notifications and crisis management, because anyone that was affected, there are rules for notifying the public, the people that were affected, and having a crisis manager that can handle that and handle the communications and handle the credit, repair services or the credit monitoring services. Those are some things that it could cover. It can also cover some fines. The average fine is anywhere from $260 to $429 per record that is compromised. And a record is two pieces of information. So if someone got your name and your address, that is two pieces of identifiable information that would constitute as a record. So $260 to $429 per each one of those records, including, you know, social security number, phone numbers, driver's license numbers, date of birth, et cetera. Now, in Alabama, there are penalties if you were not complying to the requirements of notification and crisis management. You can get charged or fined a penalty of up to $500,000, and you could be charged $5,000 a day for every day that you remain non-compliant. So again, these are some lump sums, or, you know, some of the things that add up into the total cost of a cyber incident, which is what the policy is trying to protect you from. It can also be used for business interruption, because obviously if your system's compromised and you can't get into your system, you can't operate under your normal circumstances until that is repaired. Then there's, for our DOD folks, compliance interruption. If your compliance is now interrupted, you're no longer compliant because there's been a breach, so there was something that wasn't up to spec. That could also lead to you not being able to bid on the next contract until everything's taken care of. So there's costs involved to make sure that you don't have that interruption. Then any damage to systems, the recovery, the actual recovering your data, getting it back, that's a cost and an expense. And then any future mitigation services. So the only thing that you can't really factor into a cyber liability policy is the damage to your reputation or your customer confidence.
Sure.
Because, you know, how do you put that into a total? So obviously having the right amount of cyber liability coverage is extremely important, because there's a whole lot of costs that happen once there is a breach.
And I think a lot of the news reports, at least I've seen, talk a lot about with the ransomware and cyber insurance. And are there instances where you would find it cheaper to pay the ransom for the client through the insurance than to deal with all the other stuff post-incident? Does that question make sense? Like, is there any negotiating with ransomware groups saying, hey, we'll give you, say they're asking for $500,000, but their insurance payouts, let's say $1 million, I'm making numbers off the top of my head. So if they had to go through the whole incident, they get at least $1 million. And you can, does the insurance company negotiate with the hacker, say, we'll give you $250,000 and let's call it a day?
I'm sure there's that that goes on. And yes, the short answer is yes.
Okay.
In fact, because having policies or public record, there are ways, I don't know the ways, but there are ways that hackers can actually find out who has an insurance policy and how much that policy is.
Mm.
And that can dictate what their ransom may or may not be.
Okay. So they may, so they may have to file the claim, get as much as they can get from their insurance, pay the ransom, get their stuff back, and then pay out of pocket to fix their system.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's just,
Because, I know for a fact that happens.
Yeah.
City of Florence, back, I guess it was, almost 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half, when they had their system compromised, I believe they decided to pay the ransom, which was like $350,000, if memory serves me right.
Okay.
And that was for the city of Florence. Now, whether or not that came from insurance, benefits on their cyber liability policy or not, I don't know. But I know it would have cost a whole lot more, or it cost more than $350,000 to secure everything to try to prevent that from happening again.
Sure. And how much, if you can say, how much are premiums in general? Like, is there a range based on company size, or is it just based on payout amount? So if you want $1 million in coverage, it's one premium. If you want $500,000, it's another. Or, how does that work?
Well, it's a great question, and it's really hard to give you an estimate on premiums today. And that's because the simple fact they're increasing, and they're increasing exponentially. The gist of it is that your premium should be based on questions that they ask about from the insurance company about your overall security profile. Now, in the past, they didn't ask a whole lot of questions because the profit margin on cyber liability insurance was extremely high. It was a cash cow for the insurance industry, even though it was a very small percentage of the overall industry in itself, as we talked about. But the fact that the claims have risen has caused, if you go from 34% of payout to over 74% payout, that's like, doubling your overhead.
Right.
Doubling your overhead means you're going to have to make it up somewhere, and the consumer is always the one that pays for anything like that. So because of those increases, there's the questions I have noticed have drastically changed from what they were to what they are now. So insurance companies are asking, there's one application that's about 4 pages of just cyber questions that they're asking about your profile, what you have, what your policies and procedures are. It feels like almost a CMMC evaluation or assessment.
Right. And that brings me to a question. So do insurance companies do a security test before deciding on the premium? I would assume they would. Kind of like if you get health insurance, if you're an older male, you have to have a physical and do all that kind of stuff so they make sure you don't have some underlying condition. So do you look at companies' cyber compliance, their cyber hygiene, as to see if they have any underlying conditions, for lack of a better way to say it?
Well, and you're absolutely on the right track, and that's part of what Assured has created and what sets us apart. Insurance companies are more and more relying on third-party assessments, information. They're even offering certain tools to, hey, if you want our policy, you need to have this specific tool in your stack. They're doing all kinds of creative things to try to evaluate what is the security level profile, what is their health, using health insurance, what is their health range, so that we can have those tables to determine where the rates need to be, the premiums need to be. Unfortunately, not all insurance companies, there's no one standard.
Sure.
So just like the questions that they ask are not consistent across the industry. Some ask a bunch of questions, some ask very few questions. It all depends on how they're assessing and evaluating through their underwriting department the risk, the company, what is your risk to them if they take on you as an insured.
Let me ask you this question, and this is not a question I sent you beforehand, so this is, I'm kind of throwing a curveball out here at you. But companies want, I'm assuming, to have as low a premium as possible, and you as an insurance company want to have as few incidents as possible. Is there a correlation there at all where if a company says, look, we're going to do specialized cyber training for our employees, can they get like some kind of credit for that to say, okay, if you do this particular training on a regular basis, then your premium will go down because we can determine that your likelihood to become a victim becomes less. And I'll be honest with you. I'm going to say this up front. This is a self-serving question on myself because I'm creating a bunch of cyber training stuff. So I'm starting to think, well, if an insurance company had a training program to give to their clients, clients would still need cyber insurance, but they become less of a risk if they're aware of what the threats are. If the employees, who are usually the first line of defense and the first line that someone gets into, make it less likely for them to hit. Does that make that question make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. And the first thing that I want to just clarify, the insurance companies or insurers are the companies that actually provide the policy. Assured One is an insurance agency or brokerage. Mm-hmm. So I'm not actually writing insurance. I am an agent or broker to get you the policies that you need.
I see.
Now, the bottom line to your question is the more secure you are, the less you should be paying in premiums. And I say you should be paying in premiums. And that's because if you just go with the typical, and I've been an insurance agent, like I said, for over 7 years in the industry. So I know how these things go, and I don't mean to slight anyone, and I'm not referring to anyone in particular because I've done it. You have a company comes to you, say they want an insurance policy for their business, whether it's cyber, whether it's their commercial policy, whatever. You fill out the required application or applications to the companies that have said that they have an appetite for that risk, that they're willing to consider that risk, that business to insure them. And you fill out the application the way that the company has lined it out. So you only ask the questions that are on that application and you send it in. And it's what I jokingly say, it's like throwing it up on the wall to see what sticks. You throw it out there and then those companies give you quotes based on the information you provided, and then you present that to your client. You know, here's one, two, or three different options. The problem is that with the fact that cybersecurity is so much more involved, if you're able to present yourself in better light, so like you were saying, if you offer security awareness training and you've got it documented and you're able to say, hey, you know, this is something we do, the applications don't ask those questions necessarily. It may be one of the questions, but then again, it may not. Mm-hmm. So it's what I use is the word advocate. If you have someone that's advocating on your behalf, then they can have conversations with the underwriters to say, hey, this is why my client's risk is better than XYZ. You know, and you're not necessarily directly comparing to another company, but to the generalities that they're looking at. So you can advocate for, and that should give you either better coverages or better coverage options or lower premiums. So the more secure you are, the more actively you are securing your overall landscape, your security profile is where it needs to be, the better your insurance premium should be.
Okay.
If you have someone advocating on your back.
So let's talk about your company. We've gone down the road. So let's start with that road. So talk about your company, Assured One. What is it? You said you're an insurance broker, right? So you kind of, right. So if a company says, okay, I want, if I listen to this podcast, I need to find out about cyber insurance. They call Todd. What are you going to, couple things. What do you want these companies to know about cyber insurance? Should they all have it? Should everybody have it? I mean, assume obviously you want as many companies to have it as possible because it makes sense to have it to protect your assets. And then how do you explain to them, how does it manage? That's a lot of questions all into one, but I figured we can roll into Assured One and talk about all those things. So go ahead.
No, that's it's perfect. The truth is that from the insurance standpoint, all companies need to evaluate the risk and determine what they're going to do to mitigate that risk. Okay. They at least should know where they're at. And if the, whether they've done that through a recent NIST assessment, a CMMC, an ISO, there's a ton of different of assessments out there. I can utilize that information to get the ball rolling. The second thing is that what we're trying to do is make sure that the company is presented in its best light. So all companies should have cyber liability, because the truth of the matter is all companies are targets. Small to medium sized businesses tend to think that they're not a target, but they're also the ones that tend to not be as secure. Mm-hmm. So therefore it's, you know, you go where what's the path of least resistance. The industry for cybercrime is a $6 trillion industry. It is very well organized. There are positions, you know, people are paid good money to get your information and to find those weaknesses, and they're going to go to the easy targets. Mm-hmm. So it's not in anymore, it's not a matter of if you're going to be compromised, it's a matter of when. Now, how much that affects you and your business, you know, it can vary drastically. And that's why I don't tell people they need to get $1 million, period. I don't tell them they need $5 million, period. You know, and just sell a one limit policy. So to answer the limits, knowing what your risk is and what your cyber liability risk is specifically, then allows you to determine what is your risk tolerance. What is it that you can tolerate? So you used a car earlier. So let's use a car as an example. If I went to the lot and I bought a $50,000 new car, truck, and $50,000, I'm not sure what that'll get you anymore. I know I paid
a used car. It'll be a used car, not a new one.
And it's an economy type vehicle.
Right.
But let's just say $50,000. Now, if you're a risk adverse person, so you do not like taking risk, you'll probably insure the entire $50,000 value plus anything that you can add to it. And you're willing to pay higher premiums for it because if something happens to that vehicle, you don't want to have to pay out of pocket or minimize what your out of pocket is. But now if you're risk tolerant, you may be willing to risk more, cover less, and pay lower premiums. But now in the event of an accident, something happens, you're going to have more out of pocket than the risk adverse person that paid higher premiums. But if you have no idea what your risk is or what your risk tolerance is, you may just choose a lower premium or have it as added as a rider or some of the other options with less benefits. And then you find out later when it's too late that your policy wasn't actually in line with your tolerance. So what we've done with Assured One is we have a cyber risk insurance assessment that we do, and it provides you what we call a cyber score. Now, a cyber score is very similar to the FICO score. It's the same type ranges. So it's very easy to understand that if you're in the 400s, then you've got some improvement that needs to be done. If you're in the 600s, then you're average, you know, but you still got room for improvement. If you're in the high sevens, 800, well, then you're great. Now, truth of the matter is there's not too many companies that I find that are in that great category unless they have really buckled down on their NIST requirements or CMMC, et cetera, and they've been very proactive and taken cybersecurity very seriously.
So when you do that assessment, do you then provide them with guidance on what not necessarily like tell them they need to fix it this way, but say, hey, these are the issues that we found as problems, and if you fix them, then your score will go up. Do you help them that way as well?
Right. And so from the insurance perspective, it's here are some of the things that if you choose to remediate them and close these gaps, then that puts you in a better light, puts you in a better position to have better coverage at a better premium. And that's where the being the advocate comes into play, where I'm able to go to the underwriters and say, hey, we did this risk assessment, and here's where they are today. Now, they have agreed that they're going to do X, Y, and Z, which is going to put them at this level, this score, at estimated range, which makes them a much better risk and puts them in a much better position. So if they do this, what can we do for them? What does that qualify them? Does that give them some discounts? Does it give them some credits? Does it give them some better coverage options? You know, what does it put them in a better position with your company to be able to get better coverage? Because they've done something that most companies are not or are not aware of, because they haven't taken the time to do the assessment.
I got you. So if someone wants to get in touch with you or Assured One, how do they do so?
Well, they can reach me by email at tzelenka@assured.enterprises, or they can always call me on my cell, 256-479-3956.
All right, I will put those in the liner notes. Everybody I talk to, I always ask a crystal ball question. So in a crystal ball question, where do you see the cyber insurance world moving over the next 5 years? I know that's probably a tough one to do because of the whole geopolitical stuff that's changing, but obviously cyber incidents are not going to slow down. More companies are going to get hit. And you were mentioning earlier that, you know, obviously small companies are big targets because they're path of least resistance. And one of my former FBI directors said there's two types of companies in the world. There's those that have been hacked and those that don't know they've been hacked yet.
Yeah, that's a very good statement. So if I was to look into a crystal ball, if that was even possible, I would say short term, we're going to find, as we are right now, where companies that have cyber liability may be getting significant rate increases to help cover the change in the profitability of cyber insurance. There's even companies that are getting non-renewal notices. And it may not be because of anything they've done. It may be that the company they had the policy through has just decided, you know what, we're not going to cover this anymore. We're just getting out of the cyber liability race until things level out. So short term, I think it's going to be even more important to have an advocate working with you to get the coverages that you need and to get you the best pricing that you can get. Long term, I think the more people that get cyber insurance, then the premiums will start coming down, because even though the profitability margin won't be ever be the same as it was back when they would write anybody for anything pretty much in cyber. But it will definitely start coming down because the pool of who all's insured is growing. So therefore their reserves are growing, and they can then be profitable on a smaller amount because of the quantity. So in 5 years, I think we're going to see that most every business will have some form of cyber liability policy. The question is what kind, just like there's a ton of different auto insurance options out there. What does the policy actually do? Because keep in mind that an insurance policy will do exactly what it says it will do and not anything more. Whether you think it should or not, it's going to do exactly what it says. So just like there's different kinds of insurance and different types of insurance companies for auto, home, et cetera, the same is going to be true for it. It is true for commercial policies as a whole, but it's also definitely going to be for cyber liability.
Okay. Todd Zelenka, Vice President of Assured One. Thanks so much for coming on the podcast. And I will, like I said, I'll have your information at the bottom of my show notes, and people can contact you when they need that insurance advocate for cyber insurance.
Let me add one more thing. I'm not sure how we need to put it as a question. Yes, Assured One, we focus on cyber liability insurance because we're attached to and part of a larger organization that does cybersecurity. However, we are a full service commercial lines, as well as personal lines, life, health, etc. So I'm not just the cyber insurance guy.
Okay, fair enough. Sorry. Yeah, I got you. Sorry.
That is my primary focus, because that's the greatest need right now among businesses, especially in our local market.
I got you. Well, Todd, thanks so much. Enjoy the rest of your week, and we will talk soon.
Fantastic. Thank you much.
Once again, I want to thank Todd Zelenka for joining me on the Cyber Guy podcast. Hope you learned a lot about cyber insurance, because I know that I did. Knew a lot more about it afterwards than I did necessarily beforehand. So again, thanks to him. Contact Assured One if you want more information on their cyber and other insurance solutions that they have there for you. So to close out the podcast this week, let's talk about a successful cyber prosecution. This is coming from the Southern District of Georgia, and this is from September of last year. The headline here from the news release: international money launderer sentenced to federal prison in cyber crime conspiracies responsible for intended loss of nearly $60 million. So the defendant was ordered to pay victims in the U.S. and elsewhere more than $30 million in restitution. So that's a nice little take there for the Department of Justice. So from Savannah, Georgia, a Canadian man who conspired to launder tens of millions of dollars stolen in various wire and bank fraud schemes, including a massive online banking theft by North Korean cyber criminals, has been sentenced to nearly 12 years in federal prison. And chances are those North Korean cyber criminals were part of the North Korean state. In other words, they were state-sponsored hackers, because North Korea does cybercrime to fund the regime. So Galeb Alamari, 36, of Mississauga, Ontario, was sentenced to 140 months after pleading guilty to two counts of conspiracy to commit money laundering. This is a quote from the case. This defendant served as an integral conduit in a network of cyber criminals who siphoned tens of millions of dollars from multiple entities and institutions across the globe, said acting U.S. Attorney Dave Estes. He laundered money for a rogue nation and some of the world's worst cyber criminals, and he managed a team of co-conspirators who helped to line the pockets and digital wallets of thieves. But U.S. law enforcement, working in conjunction with its partners throughout the world, brought to justice this fraudster who thought he could hide behind a computer screen. As described in unsealed court documents and proceedings, Alamori and his co-conspirators used business email compromise schemes, ATM cash outs, and bank cyber heists to steal money from victims and then launder the money through bank accounts and digital currency. So what's he going to do in prison? Let's see if it says here what his... looking at. He's probably, if he two counts of conspiracy. Oh, he got 140 months. I said that in the beginning. Sorry, 140 months. So that is what? That is 12 years, over 12 years. So thumbs up there. Thumbs up there to the Southern District of Georgia. Now, they only got one guy. There's still a lot of these guys, the North Korean cyber criminals are still out there doing the same thing. But it goes to show the amount of loss that can come strictly from business email compromise, where someone gets access to a legitimate email system and get someone within a company to pay a fraudulent invoice or send wire transfer fraudulent money somewhere fraudulently. Or it could be you get an email from, it looks like a legitimate vendor, and you send that stuff out. So at some point, we'll probably have a case, talk to someone to talk a little bit more about business email compromise, but that'll be in a show down the line. So once again, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to download and listen to the Cyber Guy podcast. It is available on all of your favorite podcast providers, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, Google, all that kind of stuff. Feel free to go there, leave a 5-star review if you're so inclined, leave a 4-star review if you're so inclined. If you have questions or thoughts about the podcast or anything you want to ask me about the FBI or what have you, email me, Darren@thecyberguy.com. I respond to all emails that are sent to me, which are usually pretty few and far between. So, but feel free to email, even if you want to talk about something that was good, bad, or ugly. Remember, knowledge is protection. The more you understand the threats that are targeting you, you can assess your risk online, and then you can proceed wisely. Thanks so much for listening. We will talk to you soon.